Welcome to the Casual Fridays REI podcast, where you'll learn about the wildly profitable niche of land investing. Active land investors Adam Southey and Justin Sliva are here to share their experiences with you so that you can learn how to build massive cash flow and huge profits from this highly lucrative niche. So without further ado, here are your hosts, Adam Southey and Justin Sliva.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm Adam Southey here with my co-host, Justin Sliva, and this is the Casual Fridays REI podcast. Today, we're talking about infill lot busters. Before we do that, though, let's talk about the Casual Fridays land flipping blueprint. Guys, if you're thinking about getting into this industry, this is it. This is the course you want to buy. Justin and I spent months doing consulting calls and helping people out before we ever put this course together. So what's that mean for you? Well, for one, because we've done so much consulting, we know where people get hung up, and we've addressed those issues in this course. But also, you've got two experienced land investors who came together, took the best parts of their business, and laid them out for you in an easy-to-follow video format. So if this excites you and you're thinking about getting into the industry, all you got to do is go to our website at www.casualfridaysrei.com, click on the training tab, and book a call with us. We just want to get to know you a little bit. We'll tell you about our journey. We'll tell you all about the course and then answer any questions you have. The whole thing should take about 20, 30 minutes, and that's it. There won't be any pushy sales tactics. And at the end of the call, if it's a good fit, great. We'd love to help you out, get you started, and see you reach your goals.
Friday.
What's up?
Infill busters.
Yeah, infill lot busters.
Wow. I have been told I am not partial to infill lots.
Is it true?
It is. It is. And I think we'll probably go through some of it today. I don't want to get on a rant on them because I guess the dream for me is like this 20-acre, well-treed, three-quarter drone shot with water and mountains in the background on sunset. You know, to me, that's that just that. I love showing that picture to somebody and saying, hey, man, I bought that for 10 grand. And then knowing it's going to sell for $30,000 or $35,000 or $25,000 for that matter. And they're like, there's no way. And you're like, yeah, I own that right there. Mm-hmm. And that's what excites me in this business. But infill lots, there is a ton of people that have had success buying and selling them, but there's a few more things you have to check out with. And that's what gets me. I'm super like risk adverse. I'm like, I don't want to take the chances. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, this whole thing, it made me think of my buddy right now who's out in Colorado, actually right now looking at, or he just looked at a piece of, or an infill lot to build some Airbnb properties on it. Right.
Okay.
So the lot itself was only $30,000.
Okay.
Which made it sound like it was going to be this great deal. You go out there, it's going to build a container home, $30,000 for this lot in this great touristy town, build this awesome container home, which is kind of popular out there because the area has a lot of tiny homes.
Okay.
Put up on Airbnb, and then you're making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But they did their due diligence while they were out there. The lot is $30,000, and just the septic and hooking up to utilities because it's a small town and they're foreigners and not, you know, foreign to the town.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was $35,000 just to do that. Wow. So it kind of kills the deal. And he's not the first person to have had those kind of issues come up on an infill lot.
Yeah. Wow. That's a, you know, and my mind works in a way is like, well, if this lot's been in the middle of a neighborhood for 20 years, why hadn't anybody built on it? That's, you know, that's like where my mind goes right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't know if that's good or bad. Like I have shopped infill lots and I did it with a builder in mind. He gave me an area he wanted to be. He said, get these lots for this much money. And I offered less than that. So I had a spread.
Yeah. I think that same question, though, because if you relate it back to what we do, you go, well, who would want to buy this dirt out in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah.
Right? Because I know when I first got started, I had that fear. It was like, who wants to buy 20 acres out in the middle of nowhere? And then there's so many buyers for that.
Yeah.
It's got to be the same as an infill lot. No one's just actively gone out and got them and then marketed them to sell them.
I don't believe that. Like I'm gonna argue with you about this because now, so like with 20 acres in the middle of nowhere, I could go out and there chances are, well, let's start here. With an infill lot, what are you gonna do with it?
I'm gonna mark it up and resell it.
Well, that's what you're gonna do with it. Who's the end user and what are they gonna do with it?
They're gonna build on it or in the case of like Arkansas, they're just gonna add to their property when you sell it to the neighbor.
Okay. So the chances of that happening. So if that's a potential exit strategy for the property for the next person, and that's I always try to think what the next person is gonna do with the property so I can set them up. When I household sell, I know exactly what the buyer wants, what he's gonna do to it, how he's gonna fix it, and what he's gonna do with it from there. Is he gonna owner finance it? Is he gonna flip it or is he gonna rent it? And is it rent gonna be a turnkey rent that he's gonna move into a fund? Mm-hmm. So I look at the infill lots a lot of the same way. I'm like, okay, what are they going to do? Is the neighbor person going to add to the yard on the small cheap stuff in Arkansas and you're giving it to them for $600 or $700? That's a great deal, you know, right? You do it every time. But when you're going in and buying like a $10,000 or a $20,000 half acre lot in the middle of a town or a subdivision, you got to ask yourself, okay, what is this person going to do with that?
Well, this actually brings up a good point. I just thought of this. My dad's kind of going through this right now because behind him is an empty lot, two acre lot.
Okay.
And they've lived there in his house for 20 years. Mm-hmm. He's never tried to buy it because nothing's ever gone up on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he caught wind that it may be going up for sale. So now he's in a massive hurry to buy it
mm-hmm.
at $80,000 so that it can be his and no one can ever build on it.
Yeah.
So some of these people, like you said, the lot may have been empty for 20 years. Why has no one done it before? Well, it's because they never had to worry about it selling.
And that's when the deal makes. That's when the deal makes sense. Mm-hmm. But there becomes these things that you have risk with, right? And again, I told you, I'm trying to cut all the risk out. I want to make it a machine. I want to go through it. So if I go to a lot that's going to be built on, I've got to make sure what? It can be built on.
Mm-hmm.
Is it buildable?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything in the deed restrictions or is there covenants in that neighborhood that keep it from being built on?
Mm-hmm.
Does it have utilities?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, it doesn't have sewer, or you have to run sewer to it. How much is that going to cost me? I have to put septic in. Is the lot big enough now for the permit for septic? Because it could have changed from 1978 when everything else was built.
Mm-hmm.
I had a deal come where was that at? Georgia, I think. It was a quarter acre lot. Everything was built out in this entire neighborhood. This was on a cul-de-sac. Looking at it from street view, measuring it, I mean, it was perfect. And so what I did was I took the house next to it, which looked like a standard house in the neighborhood. It was like, I'm going to call it a track home neighborhood, where track home, for those who don't know what that is, means they kind of shotgun houses together. But these are two-story, $225,000, $250,000 homes, just over and over and over, different front door, different paint, but basically the same design. So I copied that house, what the footprint of it is, laid it on this lot, and noticed one of the corners was kind of close to the back fence. Measured it, it looked 12 feet, is what it looked like, 12, 13 feet to me. And I'm like, man, I wonder what's going on with that. Well, I had the partner that brought the deal to me. I'm like, hey, let's get a hold of the county, see if they know anything about this lot. He reaches out in the county, goes, yeah, there's a 15-foot easement back there, and then they have another 10-foot setback that they have to build on that. The way that road curved back behind it, the fence when it was put in, made it too close to the property line. They couldn't build on that lot with that certain size house.
Mm-hmm.
And it killed the deal for us.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at street view, doing just the basic due diligence, is it flat? Yeah, it's flat. Does it look like it matches the neighborhood? Could the neighborhood support the comps that we were getting it for? Yeah, and you know, it just couldn't be done with what needed to be done. Could somebody probably go and try to get a variance? Probably could do that, but how long is it going to take me to get that to make it marketable on the back end?
Yeah, all I hear is headaches.
Yeah, and that's so in comparison, if I take a 20-acre recreational piece of property, it's typically going to be used for recreation,
mm-hmm.
hunting, camping, riding four-wheelers. Is there a place that it's going to be buildable on it? Well, if it's relatively flat in a couple spots, you can roll your camper up there, drop a shed on it, do whatever you're probably going to want to do with it. Put your tent on it while you're out there hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's what I find it. Now, is there some people that have knocked some home runs? We had a client tell you a story the other day that was just unreal. He's out looking at a 40-acre lot that he bought in a metro area. He sees some people with suits out there while he's looking at it, and he walks up and says, hey, what are y'all doing on my land? And he makes $140,000.
That's basically the story. I don't know the complete ins and outs, but yeah, that's totally the story he told me. My mind was blown. I've been thinking about it ever since.
Yeah, and those deals happen, and I'm not saying to anybody, hey, don't do infill lots. What I'm saying is there is a lot more checks that need to be done before you do it. And things like I said, covenants, deed restrictions, setback line. Is there an easement back there that we're missing that you don't see?
Mm-hmm.
Utilities, how much is it going to cost you to get utilities? Is there a height variance? Is there some kind of view variance?
Yeah. I also agree. I'm not telling people not to go do infill lots. I think you have to have a separate mindset for it. Like, mm-hmm. if I shop these, I'm prepared to be able to go through all of the checks that you just named off and handle them if they come and price accordingly.
Yep.
So that I can still make money if those things pop up.
Yep.
And become friends with the county. Become friends with all those people that you can go to for answers.
Yeah.
Right. And because I personally haven't run into height variance and all that stuff on a rural recreational piece of land.
I haven't either, but I had a client that has a lot that on paper it's worth $160,000. He paid $40,000 for it, and the height variance is keeping him. The height or the vision clearance variance. He has to move a driveway to a certain spot. Has to move a fire hydrant over, and the plans to do that add another like $35,000, $40,000 to the deal. Well, then he has to worry about how big how the house is built or the building is built on it.
Wow.
So it's a tough move for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the things to look at. Infill lots can be profitable. Your due diligence checklist is going to be totally different. The steps that you need to look for, the risk is going to be a little bit more. It can pay off. I'm not saying that it can't. I'm just saying that, you know, what's the term? Keep it simple, stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I roll. I'm trying to do it as low.
I try and keep it more simple than you.
Yeah.
I don't want any headaches.
Yeah. And so that's why I stay away from that product type.
Yeah.
But those are the things you have to get into the details, because you're going to have to buy as the end buyer is buying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's money in the details. Mm-hmm. So if that's what you want to do and you're okay with handling it, then go get it.
Yep.
Go make some money, then come back and tell us your success story.
Yeah, please do.
Okay. Well, I think that's it for today. I think we nailed it. It is the last day for the blueprint at the discounted sale price. So get out there. We're closing it down today at $11.59. That's going up to normal pricing. And also be sure you're going to Facebook, Instagram, give us a like, give us a follow, and then go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, go to wherever else you're listening to us. Like, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.
Thanks, guys.